Attention, patriots. Broadcasting from the Free Zones, Radio Free Redoubt begins in 5, 4, 3, 2...
Tuning in, this is Radio Free Redoubt. This is the John Jacob Schmidt Show, and I am proud to be your host. I'm John Jacob Schmidt, and if you are a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot, then my name is your name too. This is episode 1942, the 42nd podcast on the Sunday evening podcast of 2019, and we've had some very interesting developments this week in the American Redoubt. A lot of back-channel chatter going on. I'm going to talk about that in segment two. I'm just going to breach into that topic a little bit here in the news and commentary. But for the most of it, most of it's going to be covered in segment two. And I'm switching things up tonight from what I was originally planning a couple days ago. I want to go into depth a little bit more from a story from someone who went through communism and has made it public what her experiences were. And so I started to share that yesterday. If you guys didn't hear the show on KTW, that is up at podbean.com, radiofreeredoubt.podbean.com, and where you can listen to, you know, all of our previous shows. But that's what I'm going to focus segments three and four on this evening. So without further delay, let's get down to the news and commentary, which is brought to you by the author Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series with all 10 books out, including the audiobooks. You can go to 299days.com to learn more about that dystopian novel, The Collapse and the Rebuilding Afterward. Now, last week, I had made this announcement. It was kind of a Veterans Day tribute. And, oh, by the way, I hope you guys had a blessed Veterans Day. And thank you all once again for your service. But the next day, Tuesday, I got an email from somebody with a link to this article takes you to Western Journal. And I will... yes, Western Journal, one of my favorites. They picked up on this. Jack Davis over there at Western Journal posted this. And it's titled, University of Virginia Cancels Traditional Veterans Day 21-Gun Salute Over Gun Violence Concerns. Seriously. Amid cries of outrage, a decade of tradition is ending at the University of Virginia, where this faculty have lost all rational thinking and ability to reason. But at the University of Virginia this year, as the college decided to cancel its Veterans Day 21-gun salute to veterans, the college president, Jim Ryan, posted a statement on Facebook explaining the college's decision to end the salute, which follows a 24-hour vigil for veterans conducted by the school's ROTC unit, which I wonder how long they're going to allow ROTC to be in their university. But Ryan, the college president, said canceling the salute has two purposes. I was just dying to hear what this must be. First, to minimize disruptions to classes, given that this event is located at the juncture of four primary academic buildings and is held at a time that classes are in session. All right, first of all, too bad. You get the kids out there, and you have them honor those who have served our country and gave the ultimate sacrifice, because it's a 21-gun salute. You have students bailing out of class for climate strikes and other nonsense, garbage. That's just It's a flimsy excuse. It doesn't hold up. But the second reason they gave is the college was recognizing concerns related to firing weapons on the grounds in light of gun violence that has happened across our nation, especially on school and university campuses. So what? Everybody knows it's happening. You make the announcement. You've got loudspeakers. You've got texts. You have a way to text all of your students, almost all universities anymore. You send out a group text so that they know if there's things happening on the college campus, including shooting situations. And you text everybody and you make announcements and everybody knows prior to, matter of fact, not only that there's going to be a 21-gun salute, but you're encouraged to be there. And you're encouraged to step out of your class because you can probably take a break from the indoctrination anyway and go out there and do something that's patriotic. That president of that campus needs to go. He needs to be fired, as far as I'm concerned. Everybody who had a part in that decision. The local newspaper, the Daily Progress, ripped on him over this. They said this decision sends an insulting message to veterans and other patriots, the newspaper said in an editorial. It also, ironically, sends an unfortunate message about students, that they are too fragile, too delicate, too distractible to deal with the interruption of the salute, that they are too insular, too wrapped up in their own worlds to comprehend and accept this long-standing practice, that they must be protected from the reality that exists outside academia. Very well put. That's just repulsive. I got an alert from Alert USA. They're tracking the stuff going on in Hong Kong. The police there are warning of possible use of live rounds now. They're going to step up their game, I think, because the whole world's eyes are on this. I think it's the only thing that's caused them to use any restraint at all. But now they're talking about using live rounds if the protesters continue. The U.S. consulate is urging Americans to keep a low profile and, of course, stay away from Hong Kong and or at least from demonstrations if you have business there. That's very interesting. And it was a great meme. They've got two side by side in two different frames. It's a political cartoon. Antifa on the left with the communist flag and the masked face. And right next to it is a Chinese masked face holding an American flag, pointing to his right with his thumb. Idiot, the caption said. So, yeah, so true. They're fighting. We've covered this stuff before. You guys get it. But it was just great. It was perfect. Several things over at whatfinger.com. Great articles over there from the jihad section. France is the target of more Islamic jihad attacks than any other European Union state. Yet the French leftists are denouncing Islamophobia. That's over at Jihad Watch. At the Geller Report, ways to assassinate leaders. The Islamic State issues a guide to killing world leaders, and it gives three ways for jihadis to execute the leaders or officials or military commanders. And then at Bare Naked Islam, their article headlined designated terrorist group CARE, that's the Council on American Islamic Relations, demands police investigate possible anti-Muslim hate crime. Now this is CARE. This is the Muslim Brotherhood affiliated designated terrorist group CARE, demanding that the police investigate this anti-Muslim hate crime, which consisted of egging of a Muslim's car. So, thanks, terrorists, for the advice. We'll think about it. We'll let you know, or not. Democrats try out another cause for impeachment in their Stalinist show trial as the latest one flounders, and it does. That's over at Red State, and then finally at Liberty Nation on election 2020. Unfortunately, Edwards wins Louisiana again as the Democrat. President Trump went down there and made a pitch for the Republican. It was a very, very narrow race, but the Democrat was able to squeak that through, and that was in Louisiana. Sad to see that headline. Now, speaking of Muslims being the recipients of hate crimes or terrorism because their cars are being egged, this headline, Muslim candidates face hatred in 2018 political races. I think part of our media is part French. They've got to be. So now here's the headline, Muslim candidates faced hatred in 2018 political races. Here's a little news flash for you. Every candidate faced hatred in any political race that they've ran in recent times. Well, this year, hey, 26 Muslims won elections across the country, from local all the way up to Congress or, you know, the national level positions. But this report was released this month by several scholars from four universities confirming the experiences that the Muslims candidates across the U.S. faced during the 2018 political campaigns was stoking fear. That's the title of this report, hashtag Islamophobia. And just to clarify and to repeat myself, it's not Islamophobia. It is not an irrational fear of someone just because they practice Islam. It's that I strongly disagree with the worldview of Islam, and it is in conflict with a Christian, American Christian nation, which we are, that they're trying to undo. And Islam, its core doctrine is to overthrow and replace any and all other systems of governance and replace it with Sharia law and Islam. So it is conquest, and they admit to it. So it's not an irrational fear. And a lot of people understand this, which is why they're furious. And emotions run high when people see these conquerors making advancements in our political system, knowing their intent and their goals. And I don't know what examples here were given as far as what's hate or what's extremism. They want the FBI to look into cases of extremism, of course, which is an ever-shifting ghost that really is very subjective and at the whims of whoever's defining extremism at the time. Now, there's an article over at the Inland Northwest Report titled Ban Communism in North Idaho. It's written by Casey Whalen. He is at the center of this development that took place. He's the one that broke this, a hammer and sickle on a piece of so-called art in downtown Coeur d'Alene, not downtown, uptown, Coeur d'Alene, at a park. And so they've got a group, a local group, Fighting Agenda 21 in Coeur d'Alene. They got their Facebook group is CDA 2030, which is Coeur d'Alene's plan. Coeur d'Alene 2030 is what it's called. Goals that they want to, you know, make their city a world-class city by 2030, which is really interesting that the UN's got the same date set for theirs as well. And that's at, where is that? NorthIdahoExposed.wordpress.com. We'll put the links in the highlights and resources posting, but definitely one that we want to follow. But so, yeah, this was shocking, but there's also a silver lining here too. It's really good. It's good because communism got a bloody nose in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho this week. And I want to jump on it and pummel it some more, which I'm going to in this show. Now I'll be accused of calling for violence. So, Redoubt News. Constant rhetoric that the conservatives are nothing but conspiracy theorists hasn't worked yet, so they dug deep into their trash bin to come up with even more lame chat texts on Representative Matt Shea. And this is great. This is the headline I don't have the headline. Look, proof that Representative Matt Shea is not a racist, according to The Guardian, an article that The Guardian ran. Of course, they've been trying to just pummel Representative Matt Shea and those who support him with the smear campaign. Well, they got a hold of some chat texts and revealed some of the contents of those. And so let me just read this. Lame chat text. Well, I don't know if this isn't too lame because this is actually helpful. Only this time they were attempting to make some sort of connection between Representative Matt Shea and James Alsup. James Alsup is, he was elected as a precinct committeeman somewhere on the west side of Washington State as a Republican. He was elected. Well, he's also reported to be a white nationalist, racist, and all-around bad guy. The SPLC said so. So, as well as the rest of the progressive outlets. Well, the radical columnist at The Guardian was going for his pound of flesh against Representative Matt Shea when he reported that the latest chat text received included a discussion concerning Alsup. So here's a quote when somebody's asking about Alsup. Shea proposed that the group, that somebody in the group contact Alsup and quote, "Here's my 2 cents. Anthony, I think you should reach out to him, and if he is legit, parentheses, not racist or a plant, make an ally." So Matt Shea is advising one of the members of the chat to reach out to this guy after he checks him out first to make sure he's not a racist or a plant. And that's a private chat message, which is interesting because they've been trying to pin this racist label on Matt Shea, and of course all kinds of labels that we know are not true. They've been dispelled because I've been at so many of those meetings and I know the context and the content, and it's, you know, it's evident to anyone involved that this is a deliberate planned smear campaign to try to harm him. So anyway, very good. This actually proves that Shea is not a racist, as he didn't want anything to do with a racist, as he said in the chat. So that was pretty good over there at Redoubt News. Good job keying in on that. What do we got here? Stark Raving Mad. I got a couple of stories I want to share with you from the rhinopack.org. That's the Rhino Hunters of the Pacific Northwest. Great job. Global Warming's Nazi Roots. You can go there by going to rhinopack.org and just clicking on their Stark Raving Mad tab for these and more stories of the lunacy of those on the left. Germany. Hitler's Germany was the very first nation to enact global warming legislation. Did you know that? When in 1933, the Nazis enacted the Reichsnature... Gosh, it's been so long since I spoke in German. Reichsnaturschutzgesetz. I think that's right. It's the Reich Nature Protection Law. This law required that henceforth all decisions regarding the use of civilian-owned property must be approved by the state. Sound familiar? The Nazis were also the first to enact laws to protect the wilderness and endangered species. The first to enact animal rights laws, and the first to protect wolves in the early 1930s. Then, as now, the goal of all this environmental protection was never to save the land or clean the water, but rather to gain control over every aspect of people's lives. We see some similarities here. The similarities between the Democrat socialists of today and their Nazi forefathers is startling. From the embrace of fake environmentalism to their use of extrajudicial thugs to compel obedience, Nazis used brown shirts as their enforcers. Democrats used the KKK. However, since the Klan has fallen into disfavor, modern Democrat socialists use Antifa, black shirts, some masked faces, same hoodies, even similar armbands. So anyway, good catch on that. Sheesh. Drag queen Spokane slave auction. What? You heard that correctly. Out of Spokane, drag queens, that's degenerate men who dress up and pretend that they're women, held a quote-unquote slave auction last week at a homosexual bar in Spokane. Oh, my goodness. The queens, prancing around in their outrageous outfits, mocked and ridiculed local Christian pastors and auctioned off cardboard cutouts made to look like them. Oh, I can just imagine what they did with those. The degenerates were outraged because the pastors opposed drag queen story hour. Story hour is a homosexual outreach program where dressed up homosexuals read LGBTQ, ABCD, EFG, XYZ friendly literature to kindergarten and grade school students. The events are held in public libraries and are designed to desensitize children to degeneracy in general and the peculiar drag queen fetish in particular. The homosexuals were further irritated by the pastors holding church services in front of the local abortion clinic where prayers are offered for the dying babies and their moms. Proceeds from the auction go to further the activities of the abortion clinic. Somehow that seems a fitting use of those funds. Very interesting. All right. Hey, kids, it's that time of year. Oh, we can go and bring the kids back into the room now. That disgusting part of the news is over. Sheesh. Okay, kids, parents, tell your kids it's that time of year for the young partisans under the age of 18 to have a shot at winning our annual giveaway, winning an official Red Ryder Carbine Action 200-shot range model air rifle with a compass in the stock and this thing that tells time, which is actually a sundial. It's very cool. They're serial numbered. These are collectible Red Ryder Christmas Story Collector's Edition air rifles. And this will be the fifth or sixth year that we've given one away. But you have to decrypt a encrypted message using a one-time pad. Now, a lot of you are all familiar with this, and you're excited, and you should be. We'll be giving another one away, so we're going to have more details posted at RadioFreeRedoubt.com and Amron.com right after Thanksgiving. And, of course, I'll be talking about it here on Radio Free Redoubt. And in the meantime, go to RadioFreeRedoubt.com, type in Christmas or Red Ryder, and do a search for the previous years past contest, so you can see what that looks like. Maybe even start practicing using the one-time pads. Everything you need is in those previous articles, how to get started, how to use them, how to practice doing one-time pads to decrypt messages and encrypt secret messages. And you'll need to know that because that's how you're going to enter into the drawing, just like every year before. All right, guys, let's take a break. We'll come right back here with segment two coming up, and we're gonna just pummel communism this whole show. Maybe that's what we'll just title it, Pummeling Communism with a Grin. All right, this is the voice of the American Redoubt. Don't go away.
This is Radio Free Alberta. We are transmitting on 88.9 FM. From a mobile transmitter. The liberation of Alberta has begun. Phone your MLAs. Write your MLAs. Attend rallies. Take back Alberta for Albertans. This is Radio Free Alberta. Transmitting at 8 p.m. and daily recap at midnight. God bless Alberta and her patriots. Transmitting from the southeast side of Edmonton this evening. Staying positive does not mean that things will turn out okay. Rather, it is knowing that you will be okay no matter how things turn out. This is Kimberly with Radio Free Alberta.
Leonid Pilayev, Moscow University graduate, former ardent communist. For daring to speak out during Stalinist purges, he was imprisoned in Siberia. As a World War II infantryman, he was captured by the Germans, and after the war chose not to return to his homeland. Pilayev's work at Radio Liberty is so effective, Soviet diplomats and agents have often tried to lure him back with both threats and promises of forgiveness. Hanya Johansson, daughter of a Ukrainian poet, After her father's life was taken during one of a series of communist purges, Hanya and her mother escaped to the West. Alexander Vardy, engineer, writer, former Soviet infantry officer, decorated several times in crucial World War II battles. But before and after military service, he spent 9.5 years in slave labor camps because he spoke and wrote openly against the regime and because he is Jewish. Of his 23 years of married life, only 10 have been spent with his wife.
Welcome back to segment two of The Voice of the American Redoubt. This is Radio Free Redoubt. We are streaming from an undisclosed location deep in the heart of Patriot-held territory. We are in the free zones. God bless all of you outside the wire in occupied territory. You know who you are. You know where you are. And God bless you guys. Hold the line and until you can prayerfully reach a decision to get out of there, if that's what's right for you, and hopefully make your way to join the Patriots in the free zones. And when you get here, there is still a fight. They are trying. There's enemy in the wire occasionally and quite often, in fact, because, well, they've got their sights set on the American Redoubt. They want to take down the strongholds. And the American Redoubt was one of the most, if not the most prominent one, probably neck to neck with Texas by reputation. But Texas, man, they're not looking good in a lot of that state, sadly. Segment two is brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate. And if you are looking at moving to the northern part of the panhandle of Idaho, they're standing by ready to assist you in your strategic relocation. The SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com. Now, before I get into this story, I want to share with you guys something that I've shared with you before, and I try to go through this once a year, roughly. And it's been a while. I can't remember the last time that I covered this. And I'm not going to go over the whole thing, but it's important to highlight this for what I'm going to be talking about in this segment. You can find this anywhere on the internet. Just do a search and type in the 45 communist goals. Now, these are 45 communist goals that were read to Congress, and they were read into the congressional record in 1963. These are well-known goals from the Communist Manifesto and the planks of the Communist Party and their whole agenda. People that have fled the Soviet Union and were debriefed and talking about the plans. So all of this matched up. So their 45 primary goals were identified. They've actually achieved most of the goals of the communists. But and some of these examples are like number 24, eliminate all laws governing obscenity by calling them censorship and a violation of free speech and free press. Does that sound familiar? This is something like Saul Alinsky would teach, make them follow their own rules, use their own rules against them, their own constitution, right? The Bible, they're using scripture. They want to use the Constitution and say, well, we have free speech. So they want to introduce obscenity into your culture to break down the moral fiber of your culture, because the communists have identified our moral foundation, our Christian foundation as a nation, as the foundation of our strength as a nation. Number 25, break down cultural standards of morality by promoting pornography and obscenity in books, magazines, motion pictures, radio, and TV. They've done that. 26, present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as normal, natural, healthy. 29, discredit the American Constitution by calling it inadequate, old-fashioned, out of step with modern needs, a hindrance to cooperation between nations on a worldwide basis. Discredit the founding fathers, number 30. Present them as selfish aristocrats who had no concern for the common man, which they've done that quite well. Of course, you know, also just being slave owners and racists and everything else. But I want to focus on numbers 22 and 23 of these 45 goals of the Communist Party. 22 states this: continue discrediting American culture by degrading all forms of artistic expression. An American communist cell was told to eliminate all good sculpture from parks and buildings. Substitute shapeless, awkward, and meaningless forms. Number 23, control art critics and directors of art museums, or maybe even the director of an art outreach program in a city. We'll talk about that soon. They said, our plan is to promote ugliness, repulsive, meaningless art. That's what they said. So have you noticed around your town all of this hideous art, abstract, meaningless, awkward, weird garbage, supposedly as art, that's costing tens of thousands of dollars at your public library, in your parks, at your city, your city center, your city hall, and around town? Yesterday, I got I got texts and calls and emails with links to this article that came out in the Coeur d'Alene Press, and it's titled "Communist Plot or Just Plain Art?" Well, they're talking specifically about a piece of art that they have several all over the city, and they're garbage. And it's called Marker 11. They've got them all numbered. And I want to share some of this article from the Coeur d'Alene Press. It was written by Craig Northrup. But right off the bat, it starts like this. It's not immediately obvious how the dots connect between a Friday downpour at Riverstone Park and a worldwide conspiracy to control the North Idaho population, but follow along anyway. So right now, you could see somebody trying to be objective, but the bias is already showing through. But he did reference the United Nations Earth Summit in 27 as the foundation for this, which was held in 1992 in Rio de Janeiro. Delegates from 178 countries, municipalities, and other provincial governments adopted a series of non-binding goals and blueprints to move the planet toward a more sustainable 21st century. Its action plan was called Agenda 21. Since then, Agenda 21 has been updated periodically to recognize income equality, salvage dying cultural history, and reduce child mortality, among other aspirations. One noteworthy and, as it turns out, relevant adjustment included the program's name, which changed in 2015. The United Nations reaffirmed the goals of the 92 summit and revised the timetable for 2030. Agenda 21 morphed into Agenda 2030. So since its inception, it's been a lightning rod for conspiracy theorists, there's the word, fearmongers, and some politicians. Conservative commentator Glenn Beck co-wrote the 2012 dystopian novel titled Agenda 21. The froth, severity, and reach of conspiracy theories lie everywhere on the believability spectrum, from perfectly plausible to outright cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. They're fodder for activists and authors all across the country. And that's how he introduces North Idaho's Casey Whalen as one such activist. So Casey Whalen is fighting against this Agenda 2030, and the Coeur d'Alene City has a plan called Coeur d'Alene 2030. And it's all sustainable development, smart growth, all of this garbage using the same language as they were told to use, trickle down from Agenda 2130. So what Whalen says is that Coeur d'Alene 2030 is implementing the 17 Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations. The City Council has rubber stamped the UN agenda, which is to implement the Sustainable Development Goals of the UN, period. So what he's talking about here is a so-called piece of art, which is a big black square box. And it has on one side of it, which is actually facing away from the trail, but it's there prominently. You can see the pictures in this Redoubt News. It's got a great article by Brent Regan over there talking about this. But I'll tell you what, the phone calls, the texts, everything started happening really quickly. And someone did go over there and tape a Don't Tread on Me flag on this black box piece of art. But it's got the hammer and sickle on it, the communist hammer and sickle, as so-called art. Now, this was there. I want to go back to this Nicole. No, let me find it again. I had it highlighted, but it's part of this. It was chosen. There we go. So the symbol of the Soviet hammer and sickle, which is one of the symbols that's on this. There's other stuff like just an X representing the United States. First, I don't know how that came about, but anyway, it was a piece of art chosen by the Coeur d'Alene Arts Commission as part of its current program, which is a series of sculptures and creations that rotate through the community. Its creator and artist built this box-like structure featuring the word coal on each side beneath a representative symbol from the language's native country. The word coal in English hovers over the American street sign for a railroad crossing, a giant red X. That's the symbol of America. But on the Soviet, the Russian word for coal appears on another panel with the Soviet hammer and sickle on display beneath that. So they're trying to say, well, this could be just a, you know, environmental expression about what coal's doing. You're supposed to discuss this and interpret it, right? Well, Whalen did a great job exposing this, and it made the paper, thank God. Because that's what started this frenzy. So I want to get down. Oh, by the way, once the mayor found out about it, he said he's not aware of any artwork with the Communist Socialist United Nations stuff on it. But he did say, he said, I will say I am opposed to having any communist symbol displayed. He said, I don't like it. Now, Jennifer Drake is the woman who leads the city's art commission. And remember what I read earlier, where the communist goals are to have people art. Let me find it again. Control art critics and directors of art museums. Our plan is to promote ugliness, repulsive, meaningless art. Of course, in this case, it's not meaningless. The hammer and sickle has a very distinct meaning. This is like having a statue of Lenin in Coeur d'Alene. But she defended it. And she says, people will see conspiracy everywhere they look. But if you take the time to see what the artist intended, you'll see a very different message. So she says, our job is to bring art that evokes different feelings. And she didn't think it was offensive. This is very interesting to see this. I won't go into details about what was going to take place, because this could happen again, and it was peaceful and legal, but they're going to keep trying. Brent Regan put an article up over at Redoubt News called Arts for the State, and I want to share this with you, what was posted over at Kootenai County Did You Know Facebook page. That's the title of the Facebook page, Kootenai County Dijon. They do a great job over there consistently. But this is what they posted. Mayor Steve Widmeyer responded to North Idaho News with the following. The city will be removing this piece ASAP. It is a piece. This piece of art is part of an art program where pieces of art are temporarily placed in areas. Temporary. This has been there since 2016. It's scheduled to be there until next September. These are temporarily placed in these areas. The city has not purchased this piece of art. In addition, these pieces of art don't come in from the council to be approved. The city will work with the Arts Commission to develop new guidelines. Good. on this program. Personally, I find this piece of art offensive. It has no place in our community. Boom! Yes! That is awesome. I mean, I don't care for this mayor. He's a leftist at best, but this was a smart move. I just don't like, I don't like his policies. They think that Agenda 2030 is just a wonderful thing, and I don't. I think it's destructive. So on this one, kudos, Mayor Widmeyer. Good job. So, and this is what they said in the posting. We would like to thank Mayor Widmeyer for his rapid response to citizens' objections to this symbol of abject evil masquerading as art. We also expect follow-through and the city to remove this offense this week. And trust we will see no more of this nonsense from Ms. Jennifer Drake and the rest of the city's art commission. Once again, to reiterate, socialism is evil. It is not wanted nor welcome in North Idaho, even in the form of art. Hashtag liberty lives here. Good. So let's close out segment two with this. Micah 2, 1 through 2. Woe to those who scheme iniquity, who work out evil in their beds. When morning comes, they do it, for it is in the power of their hands. They covet fields and seize them, and houses and take them. They rob a man and his house, a man and his inheritance. Scheming evil. And dirty, rotten communist symbology doesn't belong here, nor the defense of it. So, thanks. Great job to all the patriots and Mayor Widmeyer. Good job, North Idaho. Don't let them have one inch. They're going to come back and they're going to argue. They're going to argue censorship. They're going to argue freedom of speech and everything else. Don't buy it. We're not falling for it. Good job, everyone. We'll be back to segment three right after this.
Are you prepared for an economic, socio-political collapse in America? Do you wonder how something like that could be possible? What would that even look like? I recommend Glenn Tate's 10-book series titled 299 Days. From a lawyer and government insider's perspective, he lays out a plausible scenario that could very well come about if we continue on the path we're on as a country. Through his fictional character, he lays out his own real-life journey to prepare himself and his family for the possibility of a future full of difficult challenges and what seem like impossible choices. 299 Days is a high-action dystopian novel written from the perspective of the average Joe American and outlines realistic plans and action steps that you could implement to prepare yourself and those around you for the difficult possibilities ahead. Go to 299days.com to learn more. This is segment three. Segment three brought to you by Strategic Landscape Design. Designs to help keep you safe and to help you thrive on your property or the property that you're looking to purchase. They offer remote consulting services. So even if you don't live in the American Redoubt, they can still assist you with planning of your property and laying things out, such as water, food, energy, security, the off-grid, solar, alternative energy. Totally getting you set up, making the best use out of the property, or helping you. It's another service they offer, helping you find the property that might be right for you. If you have a difficult time choosing and you've got multiple options to select from, then you want some professional help to walk you through that process. Check them out at strategiclandscapedesign.com. All right. Now, yesterday I started sharing an article with you from a woman who emigrated to Canada from Czechoslovakia. Now, we have got to listen to the people who have already gone through failed experiments of communism, who are trying to warn us in the West not to go down the same path. Now, she's got a great Facebook page. This is Zuzana Genosova Den Boer. There we go. And this article They're saying, you know, please share this article. So that's what I'm doing. It's titled, I Survived Communism. Are you ready for your turn? And at the top of her page, she's got the Canadian flag with the hammer and sickle in the middle of the maple leaf, designating what they're trying to turn, what the Marxist globalists are trying to turn Canada into, and are actually really very well on their way. And at the top in the banner, it says climate change or system change. Great way of framing that, because that's exactly what it is. It's a system change. It's a global system of governance. So I was looking at her Facebook page, and she posted something here, the Venezuela timeline. Now, remember, in 1992, Venezuela had become the third richest country in the hemisphere. In 1997, they were the second largest purchaser of Ford F-150s. In 2001, they voted for socialist president income inequality. Quote, unquote, income inequality. In 2004, private health care is completely socialized. In 2007, all higher education becomes free. In 2009, socialists banned private ownership of guns. In 2012, Bernie Sanders praises their American dream. In 2014, opposition leaders are imprisoned. In 2016, food and healthcare shortages become widespread. In 2017, the Constitution and the elections are suspended. And in 2019, unarmed citizens are massacred by their own government. And of course, thugs as well, street thugs that are used as enforcers by essentially a communist, socialist communist regime. It took only one generation of progressive leadership to plunge the country into civil war. So I want to go back to Zuzana Genisova Denbor's article, I Survived Communism. Are you ready for your turn? So go and check it out for yourself. Her Facebook page, follow the stuff that they're doing. And in Canada, they are an exit move to break away from Canada. They're saying it is so far gone. The only way they're going to be able to survive being free people and outside the clutches of communism is to break away from Canada. And that's what that's their message. And this is from communists, people who came from communist countries, who fled it, and now they're warning us. So I want to share this with you. It was scientifically proven that communism is the only social economic system providing the masses with justice and equality. 100% of scientists agree on this. The topic is not up for debate. So proclaimed my professor during one of his lectures on the subject. Scientific communism, while the country of Czechoslovakia was still under communist control. I was reminded of his blustery pronouncement the first time I encountered the spurious claim that a consensus of 97% of scientists agree global warming is man-made. Most people don't question scientific statements because they think they are facts. They do not understand that scientific statements must always be challenged because science is not about consensus. Ideology is. In March 2007, the website WorldNet Daily published an article entitled Environmentalism is New Communism. In it, the former Czech president, Václav Klaus, stated, "It becomes evident that while discussing climate, we are not witnessing a clash of views about the environment, but a clash of views about human freedom." He goes on to describe environmentalism as the biggest threat to freedom, democracy, the market economy, and prosperity. Klaus has also written a book, Blue Planet in Green Shackles, in which he states, "Communism and environmentalism have the same roots. They both suppress freedom." He also warns that any brand of environmentalism calling for centralized planning of the economy under the slogan of protecting nature is nothing less than a reincarnation of communism, new communism. Klaus understands communist propaganda very well. He should. Most of us who lived and suffered under communism can instantly recognize any signs of communist ideology, no matter how slight or subtle. Since I received my own vaccination of communist propaganda during the first 27 years of my life, I too am immune to this disease. If someone is trying to save me against my will, I'm instantly wary and ready to fight back. If it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. So try to imagine how I feel now as a Canadian when I see the same tactics and hear the same phrases I saw and heard for years under communism, only this time in English. If you think I'm paranoid or that communism in North America is far-fetched, then good luck to you. I hope you enjoy what's coming your way. Here's a quote from Nikita Khrushchev in 1960. He said, "You, North Americans, are so gullible. No, you won't accept communism outright, but we'll keep feeding you small doses of socialism until you will finally wake up and find that you already have communism. We won't have to fight you. We'll so weaken your economy until you fall like overripe fruit into our hands." Communism can be characterized by a single word: deception. Communists never disclose their real intentions. They are fraudsters who employ different identities, names, and slogans, all for one goal: totalitarian enslavement. Since 1970, the goal of the Communist Party USA has been to subvert environmentalism and use it to advance their agenda. In 1972, Gus Hall, then chairman of the Communist Party USA, stipulated in his book titled Ecology, "Human society cannot basically stop the destruction of the environment under capitalism. Socialism is the only structure that makes it possible. This is true in the struggle to save the environment. We must be the organizers, the leaders of these movements. What is new is that knowledge of a point of no return gives this struggle an unusual urgency." Now, this idea was incorporated into the U.S. Green Party program in 1989, the same year Soviet Union communism collapsed, in which the fictitious threats of global warming and climate change are used to scare the public into believing humanity must save the planet. This urgency, along with other green issues and themes it interrelates, makes confronting the greenhouse effect a powerful organizing tool. Survival is highly motivating and may help us to build a mass movement that will lead to large-scale political and societal change in a very short time. First of all, we must inform the public that the crisis is more immediate and severe than they're being told, that its implications are too great to wait for the universal scientific confirmation that only eco-catastrophe would establish. Do you think the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is promoting science rather than socialism? Read the following admission from the co-chair of the UN's IPCC Working Group during an interview in 2010 with the Swiss newspaper Neue Zürcher Zeitung. Quote, "We must free ourselves from the illusion that international climate policy is environmental policy. We must state clearly that we use climate policy de facto to redistribute the world's wealth." Do I have your attention? Then let me describe to you how communist propaganda and methodology work. There are three main stages. First, polarization. By the way, the KGB term for polarization was demoralization. So, the second phase, destabilization. The third phase, revolution. Stage one, polarization. Divide and conquer. This is what the KGB described as demoralization. So, polarization. In order to win power, communists first polarize their target society. The notion of injustice is introduced. One group of people, poor workers, are made to feel victimized by a second group, to the point they demand civil discourse. Who are these people that supposedly victimize poor workers? Here's a clue. George Orwell said, "Communists don't care about poor people. They just hate rich ones." The one thing a communist cannot abide is a wealthy person. For communists, the rich are owners of private business, especially successful ones. They are loathed and demonized as heartless, spiteful monsters who exploit their employees and don't care about their welfare. The rich are public enemy number one. They don't care about people or the environment. They care only about profit and wealth. Dare to disagree? Then you are a denier and an imperialist traitor. And after completion of stage three, you will be physically liquidated. Vladimir Lenin said, "We must hate. Hatred is the basis of communism. Children must be taught to hate their parents if they are not communists." That's Vladimir Lenin. During the first stage, communists focus on altruistic people, people with big hearts, full of good intentions, who believe in doing good for goodness sake. Why? Because idealistic people are usually naive and easy to manipulate, especially via their emotions. Recognizing how essential people are to the success of his revolution, Lenin referred to them as useful idiots. Stage 2, destabilization. During the second stage of the basic values of society, are targeted for change. This will always start with education. And Vladimir Lenin also said, "Give me your child for 8 years and he or she will be a communist forever." Communism always uses teachers and the education system to impose its ideology and promote its values through indoctrination. My own indoctrination started in elementary school in grade 4. We all had to become young pioneers. From that day, we were taught about the imminent danger posed by capitalistic countries. The curriculum in school gradually but firmly established admiration for communism and loyalty to the Communist Party. We were constantly reminded of how we live in the best political system in the world, the country with the best social justice and equality. Our teachers participated in this process, either voluntarily or involuntarily. I remember teachers who actively reinforced communist indoctrination in schools. They exploited a child's emotional immaturity, lack of experience and knowledge, vulnerability, to impose their communist ideas, beliefs, and values. They took advantage of their position of authority, of natural trust that children place in teachers, to brainwash a young and vulnerable generation, to train the next generation of communists. Scaremongering was a favorite tactic. Embrace communism, fear capitalism. Otherwise, your country will be overtaken by imperialists and you will be exploited. Who is not with us is against us. If you think this can't happen in Canada, and John Jacob Schmidt speaking here, add the United States to that, then I have news for you. It's been happening for some time in both Canada and the U.S. The environmental cause was targeted years ago by communists as a catalyst for promoting socialism and paving the way for communism. New communism is based on all the old communist ideological principles and beliefs, but uses environmental as its agent of change to completely alter the core values of Western democracy and destabilize or demoralize society. As illustrated by the following excerpt from Captain Eco, written by Jonathan Porritt Ellis Nadler and published in 1991, children are being indoctrinated in our schools, being made to believe that it's their responsibility to quote-unquote save the planet. And your planet is in serious trouble from pollution, toxic waste, and the loss of forest, farmland, and fresh water. Your parents and grandparents have made a mess of looking after the earth. They may deny it, but they are little more than thieves, and they are stealing your future from under your noses. Here's some examples. In May 2012, a grade 3 class took to the streets of Toronto with signs to protest the construction of the Northern Gateway Pipeline. The protest was organized by their teacher and a local community volunteer. Pure Marxist method. Just like these kids who marched in protest to save the planet, we too were made by our teachers to march with banners and signs to save our country from the imperialists. In 2011, in Laval, Quebec, a 6-year-old boy was disqualified from a teddy bear contest because a Ziploc was found in his lunch instead of a reusable container. How did this boy feel after being ostracized and excluded from his peers? Maybe he felt punished for his parents' actions. What's the next step? Encourage children to report their own parents who use Ziplocs instead of reusable containers? Denunciation is common practice during communism. In April of 2018, an Edmonton father went to an elementary school to see his grade 4 daughter, to see her play. In the play, the children sabotaged a factory in the name of climate change, then went on to save Alberta from its evil oil industry and greedy oil barons. Textbook communist methodology, demonizing the private sector, the oil industry, by representing them as greedy oil barons. In some university lecture halls, professors are also trying to indoctrinate the new upcoming proletariat. Every time I see elite university students protesting capitalism and advocating socialism, I wonder if they realize that if they succeed, it will be their very last protest. In an interview recorded in 1984, KGB defector Yuri Bezmenov described the consequences of his ideological subversion or indoctrination. Here's a short excerpt. Quote, "A person who is demoralized or indoctrinated is unable to assess true information. The facts tell nothing to him, even if I shower him with information, with authentic proof, with documents, with pictures, even if I take him by force to the Soviet Union and show him a concentration camp, he will refuse to believe it until he will receive a kick in his fat bottom." That's Yuri Bezmenov on Useful Idiots and the True Face of Communism. In a YouTube channel, the children currently attending our elementary schools will vote in 10 or 12 years. How many of these children are being or have already been brainwashed into believing that in order to save the planet, they must vote for a government that will stop destroying the planet by eliminating private ownership and taking control of production? The philosophy of the classroom in one generation will be the philosophy of the government in the next. That's a quote by Abraham Lincoln. If you believe warm, cuddly socialism leads to utopian communism in which equality and social justice prevail, then allow me to impart some insights about the social justice delivered to us by communists. You deserve to know a little about the substance in which you will have to swim before you dive into the cesspool called communism. That's part one of two. I'll read the second part in segment four, and we'll close out with that, with an article on communism from someone who escaped communism in Czechoslovakia and now warning her fellow countrymen in Canada and those of us who will listen in the United States. And I think it's worth listening to. Stay right there. We'll be right back with segment four here at the Voice of the American Redoubt.
The communist goal was to kill the concept of freedom and to indoctrinate a new generation with atheism and hatred of the free world. Children were a prime target.
We need to focus every inch of our being on climate change. Because if we fail to do so, then all our achievements and progress have been for nothing.
Parroting words supplied by the Kremlin.
People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you?
Hi, I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's Great Redoubt, North Idaho. For years, we've specialized in locating and securing the best survivalist retreats in the most sustainable area America has to offer. The clean and abundant fresh water found in North Idaho's springs, creeks, lakes, and rivers are the primary reason folks come here, as nothing is more important than water. Excellent seasons, rich soils, and clean Rocky Mountain air make for an ideal growing environment with no threat of tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes. The best part of North Idaho is her people, friendly conservatives with beliefs deeply rooted in the Constitution and a sense of community. I want to invite you and your family to join us here, to secure a peaceful future in a place that will sidestep much of the chaos that we all know is coming. Call me today at 208-667-1776 or visit me online at revrealty.us. That's www.revrealty.us, revrealty.us, and may God bless you. Renegade.
We are back with the fourth and final segment of Radio Free Redoubt, and segment four is brought to you by Werks Holsters. WERKZ.com is the website to learn about how you can get your custom Kydex holsters and magazine carriers that are made right here in the American Redoubt inside the free zones by Patriots with a lifetime guarantee on everything that they make. So check them out at Werks.com. Now, this is the second part of an article that Zuzana Genisova Den Boer wrote and posted, and because she wants to warn her fellow countrymen and anyone who will listen, and to help spread this message, her testimony. And so that's what we're doing. And I'm so grateful that she took the time to do this. God bless her. She's a patriot. She hates communism and is actually involved with several efforts. One in particular to break away from Canada as the only option. Not like they think it's going to happen, but at least to begin that messaging right now. And I support that. I mean, this is the same reason why Liberty State has to break away from Washington and form their own state, you know, because they've gone completely red, as in not Republican red, as in communist red. Anyway, this was written by Zuzana, who experienced communist rule in Czechoslovakia before coming to Canada, or going to Canada. She said, having recognized all too familiar signs of the same propaganda in my adopted country of Canada, I felt obligated to write the article below, titled, I Survived Communism, Are You Ready for Your Turn? Because I do not want my adopted country to suffer the same fate as the country from which I emigrated, Czechoslovakia. Amen, sister. And we want the same thing. Now, in the first part, she covered, of course, the introduction plus the three phases of communism, how it takes over. Polarization and destabilization we covered in the last segment. In this segment, we're going to cover the third phase, and that's revolution, which communists are really well known for. Now, polarization is also known as demoralization in the KGB textbooks. So, stage three, revolution. After gaining the support of a majority, communists call for a democratic election. If they win it, they seize power and abolish democratic elections altogether. At this point, members of opposition parties, along with all other opponents deemed to be a potential threat, are physically liquidated. In case you aren't familiar with this quaint communist phrase, it means executed. Private businesses are immediately seized and confiscated or nationalized. Key supporters, who now finally realize how they've been manipulated and exploited, i.e. useful idiots who are no longer useful, are either jailed or executed to prevent the formation of any dissident movements. All other useful idiots, having fulfilled their purpose of being communist to bringing the communists to power, are now either enslaved into the new ideology or disposed of in a variety of prescribed ways. A new privileged elite of Communist Party leaders is now formed. No hypocrisy here. After all those angry claims of exploitation by a privileged elite, what's the first thing communists do once they gain power? Well, leaders of every key institution or organization
which is a company, hospital, police, school, etc., are now replaced by an official member of the Communist Party. Competence, ability, or fitness for the job is no longer relevant or required. The only prerequisite is loyalty to the party. Economic consequences of communism. Do you think communism failed because of oppression? No. You can brainwash and threaten people and keep them dangling like puppets until the supply of goods starts to disappear. Economic reality always prevails. The problem with socialism is that you eventually run out of other people's money, is a quote she has here by Margaret Thatcher. The economic consequences of communism are always the same: poverty. And this one comes with an ironclad guarantee, a lifetime warranty. People always spend their own money more carefully than someone else's. Capitalism is about efficiency. Private businesses must spend their capital very carefully. They cannot afford to make investments in their business unless they are sure it will be worth it. A mistake could result in an increased price for their product, reduced cash flow, loss of competitiveness, eventual bankruptcy. Of course, the government doesn't have to worry about that kind of stuff. They just tax you more if they are irresponsible and make bad decisions. In a centrally planned economy, all production is controlled by government. The revenue required to operate the government and the economy is obtained through taxation. Because a centrally planned economy is not subject to the laws of supply and demand, financial goals become meaningless since there are no penalties for not achieving them. Thus, long-term government plans are never fulfilled and financial goals are replaced by imaginary production quotas. The result is profligate waste and inefficiency on a monumental scale. Communism institutes mandatory employment with predetermined duties and salaries. The problem is lack of goods and services. Even if you have money, you will have few opportunities to spend it for your own benefit. Both socialism and communism believe in the abolishment of private business. Economic resources may be publicly owned, but they are controlled by government. Communism is implemented in two stages. During the first stage, socialism, wealth is distributed to people according to their productivity. During the second stage, communism, wealth is distributed according to individual need, but it is the government who decides what those needs are, and if they even matter, not the individual. Remember the key word, deception. Socialism equals communism. Any political party or organization that advocates socialism is advocating communism. If you think socialism cares about democracy or freedom, then reread Stage 3, Revolution, above. Life under communism. What is life under communism like? In the Eastern Bloc countries, shortages of basic goods began in the 1980s. People had to get up at 3 a.m. in order to stand in line for basic necessities, bread, milk, meat, eggs, toilet paper, oil, etc. You could stand in line for hours and not even get a chance to buy something once products ran out. Other appealing aspects. Want an apartment? You can't buy one. Real estate markets don't exist. You'll probably get one eventually for free, but the government will decide the size, type, location, as well as your position in the queue, which may take years. Want a car? You must first submit an application or buy a permit to buy a car from the government, then wait in line for years. The wait time might be 2 or 3 years. It could be as long as 7 to 10 years. Want to use some recreational facilities? Government built, of course. For your vacation, you need to be approved by a labor union and wait. Want daycare for your child? Submit an application and wait. Want a garage for your car? Submit an application and wait. I submitted an application for a garage in 1988. When I left Slovakia in 1997, I still had not received a response. Sound idyllic? But here's the best part. There's no guarantee you will ever receive an apartment, car, garage, daycare, recreation, or anything else you might want. If there is any record ever of your non-compliance with communist ideology, you will receive nothing.
As one communist leader informed me, after I refused to become a member of the Socialist Party, forget about an apartment, forget about daycare, forget about a salary raise, forget about any benefits. Close quote. Communism results in the poverty of an entire society. By comparison, free market capitalism has lifted the highest number of people out of poverty in human history. Corruption under communism. Because of lack of goods and services, corruption and bribery become endemic under communism. Of course, corruption also exists in capitalist countries, but communism elevates it to a completely different systemic level. It's not what you know, but who you know. To function in order to survive, you must have a network of connections and pay bribes for everything. Education may be for free, but there's no guarantee you'll ever get your desired school's program, even if you have top marks. The state might have different plans for you or for your child, but with good connections and the timely delivery of a valuable gift to the school principal or party leader, anything is possible. Healthcare may be for free, but if you want your doctor to be sober for your surgery, better pay up. Paying bribes to doctors in cash or gold was common in the Eastern Bloc. I was even told how much I must pay by the doctor himself. Police are a special case. Corrupt, enjoying their power immensely. Did you speed? Your choice is between a lesser bribe and a much more expensive ticket. No court, no argument, no place to complain. Need anything from government employees? Good luck. Communists invent stamps of different sizes and shapes. To get your document or permit stamped, you must pay a bribe. You want a new book, new clothes, or a better piece of meat? Better know the saleswoman and be really nice to her. Your car has broken down and needs a repair? Oh dear. Now, you're in real trouble. Leaving a car in a repair shop entails the risk of good functioning components in your car being secretly replaced by inferior or non-functioning ones. The good components will be sold or exchanged for other goods. This is how exchange markets work under communism. Due to lack of goods, everyone steals. We used to say, who is not stealing from the state is robbing his own family. Without connections, you will remain in a queue for a very long time. And finally, here's a truly delicious irony for you. Do you think communists care about the environment? I remember hills near chemical plants laid bare, denuded of vegetation by polluted air and acid rain from towns where heavy metals were produced, places where aluminum had poisoned the groundwater, cities where the haze from industrial smog was so thick you couldn't see through it, and it hung there for months, places where noxious compounds in the air forced residents to wear face masks. Naturally, there were environmental laws, all conveniently ignored in the name of glorious socialism. And it also reminds me also that there are so many things in the United States and Canada that you can do that violate ecological laws. But if you pay a fee, it's acceptable. And this is what would happen. You just pay a fee and you keep doing what you're doing. But until you pay your fee, what you're doing is so dangerous and harmful to the ecology that you can't do it. You face fines and penalties. But if you pay a fee, get a permit and pay them, well, that's, I guess it's not harming the earth anymore. So, reading on, the worst part is fear of being arrested, of being tortured, of dying as a political prisoner in a prison, labor camp, or uranium mine, which is a slow death from radiation poisoning. Incarceration in an insane asylum. You have to be crazy to oppose the regime. Or of the same thing happening to someone you love. Fear is the primary tool for keeping people silent and obedient. Those who do not comply are interrogated, tortured, intimidated, put under surveillance, as the MUKL, destined for liquidation by the secret police, or just killed, which is quicker and much easier. Those political prostitutes called informers are everywhere, especially universities. They'll report everything you do or say. Forget about freedom of action speech, or even thought. The party controls everything, and you voted for them, didn't you? Freedom is a fragile thing and is never more than one generation away from extinction. Those who have known freedom, then lost it, have never known it again. Ronald Reagan. How many people have been murdered in capitalist countries for not being supporters of capitalism? How many have been murdered by a capitalist state for being anti-capitalist? If we turn the questions around and ask how many have been murdered in communist countries, the answer is between 80 to 100 million globally. We are currently in the second stage, the destabilization stage, of the new green communism. Are we so gullible that we can be taken out without one shot, as Khrushchev predicted? Have we all taken our many freedoms for granted? Are we prepared to gullibly give up those freedoms to those advocating socialism? Or are we prepared to resist the tide of radical leftism? Socialism equals communism. And after reading this article, I hope you have no illusions about what it is or where it leads. Canadians will soon have the chance to demonstrate if and how much they treasure their freedom. Good luck, Canada. And then signed, Zuzana Janisova Den Boer from Calgary, Canada. Thank you and God bless you, Zuzana, for sharing this. And it's an honor for me to be able to share it with this listening audience. And I hope they take it to heart. In fact, I hope they go to your Facebook page and find this on the internet and print it out and share it with others. So anyway, guys, we're at the end of the show. I know it's probably just went a little bit longer than usual. And God bless you guys for your patience. You be safe out there and stick around after the show. We've got the next segment of I Was a Communist for the FBI. Old time radio. But first, before that, Lady Liberty's next Lady Liberty. You're first to hear it right here. Episode 12 coming up right after the show here in just a couple minutes or in just a minute. And then I Was a Communist for the FBI old time radio episode right after that. You guys have a blessed week. This is John Jacob Schmidt. And if you are a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot, my name is indeed your name too. Good night.